She would have us go, the lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue.
The lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue. The lips, the teeth, the tip of the tongue.
Which, it starts to sound witchy.
I have newt, burn them all.
No, it was amazing.
Yeah, we had the Viva, Viva, Viva versus other paper towels.
Whoa.
And Mommy made me mash my M&Ms. Mommy made me mash my M&Ms. And yeah, the red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather, pink feather, purple feather.
I think the only other one I know is from Arrested Development.
Which one?
Which is Tobias when he's going to be a mole.
For oh my God.
He's like, let Lily lick Lionel's lusty leathers.
Let Lily like Lionel's lusty leathers. Let Lily like Lionel's lusty leathers. That's a good one.
Yeah, and they're like, the levels are fine. I remember that. I mean, of course, because I'm a fan, but I remember being in a class in college, and we were at a computer lab, and a friend of mine also, who's named Michael, so I was like, Michael. I guess he knew there was like a website that just had a big photo still from that moment, mm-hmm. and the audio of that, let Lily lick Lionel's lusty leathers, over and over again. And he clicked on it, but his volume on his computer was turned like up way too loud. So the entire class just all of a sudden heard,
let Lily lick Lionel's lusty leathers.
I lost my shit because nobody exactly knew where it came from.
He
did get on it real fast, but it was, I was like red in the face probably from trying not to laugh. So I probably look guilty.
Shouldn't have had to hold back your joy.
Yeah, it was good.
That's funny.
I mean, when you know you can't laugh, it's almost sweeter, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Yeah, it makes it funnier when it's not, when it's really not supposed to be happening.
Yeah, because then the energy, like, lives in your body. You
know? Absolutely.
Yeah, you get it.
100%.
Yeah.
I think the shame of it all.
Shame. Yeah. No, that was incredible.
A lot of comedy is based in shame.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with what we're going to talk about today.
No, quite the opposite.
Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Chelsea.
You know what I could use?
What could you use?
A breath of fresh movie.
Me too.
Yay. No.
One more time. This is A Breath of Fresh Movie, a podcast, a weekly podcast, where I, Victoria Hartley.
And I'm Chelsea Pope.
We watch a movie neither one of us has ever seen, and then we talk about it.
That we do.
And we don't watch it together, by the way.
No, well, like,
this is the first time we're talking about it.
Not that we can't. We did that with Lamb. We watched it together.
We did.
We watched Lamb together. It's not like we're not allowed to watch the movies
together. Well, we're allowed. We're allowed, but, right, as if this is like, like, this is a scientific experiment and we can't deviate.
Right.
We have to do these blind studies.
I almost wish we were like,
we shouldn't even know the name of the movie.
No, I wish we were like cool and casually wealthy enough that we had flexibility in our schedules that we could just like go to the movies and then immediately after like go and record a podcast or whatever.
I would love that. Yeah.
Like have a beer or whatever. I'm not saying we have to drink. I'm just saying we can just go watch a movie, unwind, and then just go straight into the pod, which is what we did for Lamb, I think, right? Or did we wait a day? No,
we went right home.
We went right to your home.
The only thing that is a hitch for me is that, like, I do love to, you know, do a little bit of, here's what you should know. It's not like we can't riff, though.
But it's important to get out the nuts and bolts, because I'll be listening to a podcast about a movie or about anything.
And it's like, I didn't get
and
anything.
I'm just like, you're not charming. We don't have that problem. We're really great people. Yes. Everything we say is important. But when I listen to other people, sometimes I'm like, what is this about?
Yeah. I mean, critiques of podcasts are well-founded, I think.
Not ours.
No.
But other people.
Any field has pros and cons.
Yeah, for sure.
Con artists.
That being said, you know, like, yeah, it's the context and the information about the thing is important.
Yeah,
or
I found out some things about the movie today's movie that I'm like, I'm so glad I dug a little bit,
because I think it's important.
Yeah.
It's important to share that, especially because it's just important to keep, like, I feel like the purpose of it was to spread awareness, and so it's like the more you proliferate that information, the more the goal of the piece.
Oh, we didn't mention this, right?
What?
We will talk about anything.
Oh yeah, but we might not talk about everything, but we will talk about anything. So like,
yeah, I think I flipped it this week.
Spoilers ahoy ahead. Yeah. But this is also like, this is a, what we're going to talk about is a documentary. So it, like, we didn't spoil anything per se, or we're not gonna.
Yeah, it's a moment in history. I don't think there's anything we can ruin.
Yeah, I really think no matter, there's, I mean, unless we were to literally verbally dictate every beat of this,
still,
it's still essential. Like, I mean, what's great about,
you'd be mad at us, you wouldn't be mad at the doc.
Yeah. We can take it
anyway. Today's movie, by the way,
yes,
is Summer of Soul, 2021 documentary film. It's not a concert film, I want to make that clear.
Right,
it has great concert footage in it, but it's much more than a concert film.
Right, there's a lot of, what really made it meaty was a lot of the context.
Hell yeah.
that was surrounding these very full, intact musical numbers. There's clearly a lot of reverence for the music, but I was much more intrigued by the context of everything that was being presented, which is not to say that I didn't respect and appreciate the music.
No,
it was really, I mean, good, especially Nina Simone. I'm quite a fan, so yeah. I really enjoyed.
I thought it was a perfect balance. I mean, I think each was helping each other. The music's like a nice little treat, you know, and an right. emotional like moment. But you know, also there was emotion in the way people. I mean, this documentary was directed by Amir Thompson, also known as mm-hmm. Questlove, and this is his first documentary ever. And sort of like expecting it to be really, really heavy on the music, or I had assumptions about him, how like, oh, he's so knowledgeable about music, he must have known about this event and like brought, you know, this is his passion project. And yeah. It is kind of a passion project, but evidently, you know, this event itself is, it was kind of mythical.
Right.
Like, people almost kind of doubted their memory.
I mean,
like,
if
it happen?
If Questlove is discovering this, then we all don't know.
Exactly. No, you know? That gave me so much comfort. Like, not that he wasn't aware of the Harlem Cultural Festival, but he when he found out that there, so these tapes, the whole thing was videotaped, and mm-hmm. the tapes ended up sitting in a basement for about 50 years. And
this what it is that this is, yeah, it's a festival in Harlem,
right,
that went mm-hmm. 6 weekends. Basically, it was being called Black Woodstock, but it's not
after
that.
The fact, yeah, to, as a way to try to get people to wrap their heads around
basic,
it,
yeah, to
yeah.
try and contextualize it. But it's like, it's bigger than that.
Oh, much
it's longer and cooler.
Well, and I will get into it a little bit, but I learned there were Harlem Cultural Festivals the years leading up to this.
Mm.
There were actually two before this.
But this is the
big one.
The big one.
And also, contrary to, so the title is Summer of Soul or When the Revolution Cannot Be Televised. The thing is though, these tapes actually were like made into hour long TV specials that ran that year. So it was televised.
Sure.
And I know that that's a reference to a song and, you know, all that, like, or, you know, the revolution will not be televised. I mean, it's not just a song.
No, but it's, I mean, it is, to be fair, like, that is such a badass title, though. Like,
oh, it's a great title.
It draws your attention right away, like, in terms of his Oscar campaigning for this, which I don't want to say he was specific. He obviously wasn't just out to get an Oscar. And then the real value, especially for a documentary to win an Oscar, which this did, is to just to increase, you know, awareness,
viewership,
just
awareness.
Viewership mm-hmm. and awareness. And that is,
yeah,
that is definitely the kind of title and hype to make it happen.
I agree. You're right. It has merit. And I'm not saying like, oh, he's a liar or like, oh, he doesn't know. No. It was deliberate.
Yeah.
It was a deliberate choice. And I get that. But there's just something funny. As soon as I dug into it, I was like, oh, it was televised.
Right.
But anyway, I think you're absolutely right. This is a film about Black erasure, or about the idea of Black erasure. So I think that also makes it an appropriate
title. Yeah, that makes
title.
It a very, yeah, like you kind of, once you hear that whole title, you're like, oh yeah, this is something really significant that was kind of just
ignored.
Being yeah. buried, ignored,
yep. totally.
Overlooked.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's got incredible performances from people like The Fifth Dimension, Stevie Wonder, The Staple Singers, Sly and the Family Stone, Mahalia Jackson, Gladys Knight and the Pips. I mean, there's many more.
Yes.
I'm not going to list them all, but there's a lot.
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
And so it's like the breadth of it, too, is just like this further reminder of like, there's just so much more. We're not that. People learning about history mm-hmm. and learning about, you know, the evolution of culture, even just pop culture, you know, regardless of race at this point, like so much of that foundation exists mm-hmm. in that time.
Totally.
In that space, you know, amongst those artists, a lot of innovators that have directly influenced a lot of what we're taking in that we don't even consciously realize.
Yeah, everybody is has an inheritance from this time.
Right.
And yeah, the summer of 69 is incredibly turbulent, incredibly... It's in a period of history in the mid-century, in the United States in particular, of just like an incredible cultural revolution is happening. And there have been a number of assassinations. So there's also a tremendous amount of disillusionment and feeling like institutions have been failing you. And this concert's like a very healing moment. It's a year after Martin Luther King was assassinated. And of course, there's that very beautiful scene of them kind of really sort of having like a memorial for him. And that was very powerful. But, you know, there's also so much joy, and the street style is incredible.
Oh, sure. Like, I mean, yeah, it's, you know.
Like, all those, and the reminder, like, blackness is, it's not a monolith. Like, there's many kinds of blackness, and they're all the different, like, the Cuban roots, the Caribbean roots, you know, the Afrocentrism, black consciousness, like, taking the word black back. Like, it's just, like, such a, there's so much beauty in this movie.
Right.
Like, so much beauty. It's so much more about black love and liberation. But it's happening amid protests and amid civil unrest and anyway, I'm going off.
All of that is very important. This if you're not made aware of these things prior, like if you already weren't aware of these things, you'll certainly become aware of them in this film. I like what one of the things I appreciated about this particular documentary that is sort of folding in these musical performances along with all this cultural context is that it's not necessarily spoon feeding you a lot of basic information about the past, but it is sort of helping you reiterate and contextualize in sort of the grander sort of like K-12 narrative of, you know, the 20th century, why this festival was significant and what was happening at the same time, I think, in terms of like, you know, the moon landing.
Oh, I loved that part.
Yeah, that was definitely incredible. A standout.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like that,
it tethers this movie a lot to put things in that wider perspective and say like, you don't know the whole story. Like this is not some sort of universally
celebrated,
lauded sort of brilliance of
well, and the, you know, and the very legitimate critique of like, we have people starving, you know, what are we
and
doing?
That still exists today.
Elon
it's a
Musk
lot of
just
these
bought Twitter.
I know
he said he could
Jeff Bezos
fix world hunger.
Flew into space for 12 minutes and came back.
God, I wanted that rocket to explode. There were a lot. Yeah, I mean, we're talking so much about it, but like, what are your like the first impressions? What were the top notes for you? Like, what did you come away like?
I think at first, I was a little disoriented because this is not a chronological type of film.
No.
It's not going, you know, one weekend to the next. It's very much going sort of like module by module in terms of discussions such as like the moon landing or gentrification going on in Harlem or
Maryland,
you know, desegregation of higher education.
Yeah.
And it's taking these larger subjects and almost putting them to music or showing that like the part of how this makes this such a significant time. And also to going performer by performer as well, going into some of their background, like the significance of Stevie Wonder's sort of evolution as an artist from you know, youth to...
Yeah, to this, he's in this moment and he could have rested on his laurels and he didn't.
Absolutely.
He kept pushing.
It's, you know, it's this very much this sort of call to action that's happening.
Yeah, there's an incredible reverence for each one of the performers. But what I really loved about the interviews portions, like the sort of talking heads portions of this documentary, was I loved that it began and ended with an attendee.
Right.
This was not like a parade of celebrity interviews.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know? And when they talked to the artists, it was the artists who were there and they were watching themselves on footage, possibly, you know, for the first time.
Yeah.
Possibly. Maybe for the second time if they caught the TV. But and they have an emotional memory that they're bringing to that analysis.
I love that emotional memory. There's a lot of that sort of emotional resonance that every single person who spoke had.
It all felt so real and so close to your nerves.
Right.
Like, really, like...
It's a certain kind of weightiness and significance.
Oh, my God, I mean, that very first scene where the guy is just... He can't look away. Like,
yeah.
He's totally transfixed. I'm like, oh, great way to start.
Yeah.
Great way to start. I was thinking about, okay, I talked about Stereo Sound. I mean, there were just so many things. You're right. There were all these like modules, you know, and explorations of like segregation of music, the heroin epidemic.
Yes.
You know, Mayor Lindsay being like a liberal Republican, you know, which is like, what?
Like and, okay.
But one of the first things you hear in this movie when you see the footage is somebody going, they're calling out like a woman's name. Like, I don't know if it's Susan Collins or something. We found your wallet. Your wallet's over here. I thought that was like, it was funny, but I'm like, that's actually, that is such a genius like way to create a first impression of the spirit of this crowd.
Absolutely.
We're not trying to steal from each other here. We're trying to help each other out and have a good time.
Yeah. I mean, just there's such a positive energy about this. This wasn't some sort of act of intense, you know, vitriol or resentment or whatever, you know. I mean, not that they certainly obviously had reason for this, but in terms of just creating sort of like, it felt very much this reminder and indicator of coming together and creating community in spite of the tumult that is happening. That itself is very powerful.
Tony Lawrence was the guy who really put this together. He was like, he's such an interesting figure. So I had to like look into him a little bit. And he started out in theater, Broadway. He was a singer himself. He was known as the Continental Dreamboat because he was noted for his stylish clothing and good looks. Princess Margaret was a big fan. She used to have him like perform out at her place in Jamaica.
Cool chick.
Tell me about it. He had uncredited appearances in the films Dr. No and The Pawnbrokers. But in 1964, he is in Harlem and he starts involving himself in the community more. Mm-hmm. So he starts with like fundraisers for playgrounds. He helps like a church organization work with the city to purchase city-owned land to be able to create these. And every time a new one is created, they have a big block party to celebrate.
Yeah.
And so these block parties started happening like a whole bunch. In the, like, I think it was summer of maybe 66 or 65. I think I wrote it down. But it was... it just seemed really interesting that like this was not a thing that just happened once. There was a build, like there was a whole build to this. Okay, so in 67 there was a Harlem Cultural Festival, the very first one.
Yeah,
there were 9 events. There was like Harlem Hollywood Night, boxing demonstrations, there was a fashion show, a go-kart Grand Prix.
Oh my god, so fun.
I would totally do that today. The first ever Miss Harlem contest.
Oh, what?
Yeah, concerts featuring soul music, calypso, gospel, Puerto Rican music. It was a big deal. And then the next year, 1968, was like even more, right? Like, because they're building something. And they had, and we haven't brought him up yet, but Hal Tulchin is the one who recorded all of this, or he was the one who the footage came from. He recorded that as well. It was also broadcast on TV as part of like a series of 1-hour specials. And then the footage ended up being donated to like the New York Museum of Broadcasting. So again, there are like more things out there to be seen, and God, I would love to see it.
This whets the palate quite a bit.
It really does. I just want people to understand like this didn't just happen once. There was like a, and this guy, Tony Lawrence, really, you know, they talk about him as being what, like a con artist in the best possible way or something, because he was able to get people to make all these half commitments. And
he's a producer.
He's a producer.
Baby.
That's exactly what he is. But, you know, when you think about the logistics of putting something like this together,
it's
security, which they got from the Black Panthers.
Intricate. Is very intricate.
Intricate sound. I mean, they were talking about how they had to build the stage facing west because they had no lights and they had to use the sun.
Right.
I mean, like, you've got no lights. You have to make sure the sound system is not only good, but works. And like, just so many considerations. And the fact that when I heard that the Black Panthers did the security, I immediately thought about, you know, Altamont, that concert the Rolling Stones had. Mm. The Hell's Angels were security. Now, that was
That
was a total fucking disaster.
Right.
This went very well.
Yeah. It's almost like those two things are not analogous.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not.
It's like, yeah, they're because not. They're not each other's counterparts.
Right, because the Black Panthers were about protecting their community.
Right,
that was their goal. Like, I don't quite know what the Hell's Angels' goal is. They apart were from a like, lot of dick play.
I don't know. They're like motorcycles. And
yeah, I feel like I shouldn't say anything actually, because they're like, they still are around.
They're gonna come after they're gonna come after us two little geeky woman podcasters.
They might, dude.
We're a real threat. All 40 listeners, they're going to mobilize and turn up.
My dad's a Hell's Angel.
Oh, no. Your dad has a very cool motorcycle, I'm sure.
No, not my dad. I don't have to, like, I have so much information I probably don't need to share. I just, like, went crazy because, again, like, Mayor Lindsay was an interesting figure to me.
Yeah.
And I figured, I found out that he was one of the few, he actually did switch to the Democratic Party eventually. Like, so he's one of these. I'm just saying, he's one of these, there's very few instances.
I guess government should be for the people.
I just think it's funny, there aren't that many instances of politicians switching parties like that.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. Yeah, it is a rare instance.
So he's kind of a unique guy. And
yeah.
They did point out that he was involved with this thing called the Kermer Commission or the Kerner Commission in 1967. Basically, after a bunch of riots happened,
right.
You know, the federal government's like, oh, we got to look into this.
Yeah.
Lindsay was part of that commission and, you know, went into the riot destroyed areas. Lots of people did that, but he actually would like alert the press, get eyes on it, get cameras on it, and you know, himself as well. I mean,
right.
It's a photo op.
Sure.
But he did it
a
lot.
Politician.
He did a lot. But it meant when he was mayor in 1968, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, you know, almost every city in America rioted, you know,
mm-hmm.
that. But New York was one of the few that didn't because he showed up, like he went down there and he wasn't an unfamiliar face to them.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, no, you've been here before. Like we know, you know, and I don't want to like, I'm sure Lindsay he's a politician, you know?
No, like, but like having a relationship with the community is deeply significant and sadly incredibly relevant still today that we have such an issue. Well, ought I sound as surprised as I am? I mean, you know, well, just of course, like the hires up get further and further away from us as time passes from the actual residents.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
I once heard somebody just in reaction to anything in life that is racial injustice, economic inequality, whatever new horror is delivered to you. You're not surprised, but it doesn't make it any less difficult.
Right. Any less like,
it still
disheartening.
Hurts. It still hurts.
Yeah, you can have a reaction to that.
You're allowed to react.
And so, you know, thinking in terms of what, you know, what this film is contextualizing, it's like, it is a big deal for things to have gone down as they had because they certainly wouldn't now.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's worth mentioning, we talked about all the lead up events, but for this actual event, like I said, Tony Lawrence had Hal Tulchin record 40 hours of footage on videotape. But then they sat in this, you know, basement for a long time. And somebody at a historic film archive was like, oh, my God, like this should be a movie. Let's make this a movie. He kind of worked out some kind of deal. And then it just went nowhere. Just fizzled, you know, lost in development hell. And then somebody who was eager to work with that guy found out all about all this. And he, I don't know, I guess just acquired the television rights. I don't know how he did it, but he did. And you know, he brought in producers to start finessing this thing and they brought in an editor. Questlove was then approached by these people and he was like, yeah, I kind of didn't think this event had ever really happened. And I definitely didn't think they had any footage. I thought they just wanted like tickets to Fallon or something. You know, he was like, I don't know. And then they showed up with the hard drive and gave him, and he was like, holy shit. Like, this is incredible. And he said,
what an opportunity.
Exactly. He said, what would have happened if this was allowed a seat at the table? How much of a difference would it have made in my life? That was the moment that extinguished any doubt that I could do this.
Yeah.
Make this film. You know?
Powerful.
I also learned some really interesting things that didn't make it into the film. For instance, Hendrix really wanted to do it.
Oh, right.
He wanted to be there the same day as Sly and the Family Stone, but he couldn't be there. I don't know what happened, but he couldn't be there. He did do Woodstock, though, right?
Right.
Aretha Franklin was like a no-show.
Mm.
She was supposed to show up and sing with Mahalia Jackson.
Oh, snap.
Didn't show up.
Oops.
But I guess, you know, I read that.
How dare you, Aretha? You're canceled.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I've read conflicting things. Some interviews with Questlove that make it sound like he had never heard of this festival. But then I read another account where he was like, when the Roots were in Tokyo, a translator kind of looking at Questlove and his afro was like, oh, you must be, are you a fan of Soul Train? You know, which sounds like, he's like, well, yes, I am. I love Soul Train.
Sure.
And he's like, let me take you somewhere. And he takes him to this place called the Soul Train Cafe. And it's one of these themed restaurants in Japan where there's tons of TVs everywhere and they're playing, you know, Soul Train and various other
things. I'm not going to lie. I want to go.
I want to go so bad. Oh my God.
That sounds fun. Oh, Japan.
I'll just move in
there.
That
sounds fun.
But he said he was seeing footage of the Harlem Cultural Festival and Sly and the Family Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, back in late 90s. So I don't think he was totally unaware of this. He might not have maybe known what it was yet. You know, I don't know. It's kind of unclear. I don't want to assume.
I'm sure there's like a million different stimuli happening at the same time when you're in a place like that.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I'm sure if I was sitting in a place like that, my first thought wouldn't be if I saw that on the TV was like, when and where?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How do I get a hold of this footage?
No,
how
true.
Did they get
and,
this
and
footage?
And it was in a different stage in his life, right? He wasn't like thinking like a documentarian. He's
sure,
you know, a drummer slash front man for the Roots, you know, traveling. Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting is once he did get the footage, his process, I was really curious. I was glad I found this. Mm-hmm. He watched this footage, like he left it on a 24-hour loop. Like in his house, any screen in his house, he could have it on. He had it on. He could watch it on his phone. He could watch it at his studio, whatever, and just watch it. Sometimes even while he was asleep, it'd be on running. Mm-hmm. And he would just write down moments he got to have, you know. And once he had like about 30 moments or so, he felt like he had kind of like a start. Now, initially, it was much more of like a music themed thing.
Yeah.
And I guess his first cut, you know, was about like 3 hours long. And he had some frank discussion, I guess, with his girlfriend about it. And she was just like, she kind of reframed it for him to make it less about like the music and this thing and more about like our history, like, and that this is bigger than you. And this is,
she
like,
did good.
She did
that's
good.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I think for me too, and it's not a criticism. It's just me being me, Chelsea, watching this documentary. Mm-hmm. As much love and appreciation as I have for the music, I'm such a layman in terms of literally anything that isn't musical theater. I'm sorry. And even most modern musical theater. So if it's beyond that or old school, no doubt, okay. I'm a freaking dummy. So, I mean, we can't introduce every single artist and go through all of their back history and go
exhausting.
And yeah. And so I do appreciate that this film, like, it dabbled in that to give me some information. But like, I also did, I was familiar with the majority of the names, you know, which was helpful as well, you know, and Google exists and I use it and that's helpful. But I'm also grateful that this was something that was put into a broader framework.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think she was the one who was like, it should end with Nina Simone and this young gifted in black,
Who I just like love. And that too was very powerful.
Oh my God. And like that's, I didn't realize she was premiering that song there.
Yeah,
like that was exciting.
I didn't know anything.
I mean, I knew that song, you know, but somebody was commenting right in the one of the interviews. They said, you know, Nina Simone has this way of expressing pain and hope simultaneously.
Yeah, I love that quote. That was really nice because it's so true. She can be very sorrowful, mm-hmm. and also incredibly like ethereal and uplifting.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? Questlove, he said, for people watching this, you either have empathy or you live through it or you respect it or you admire that time period or you're currently in those struggles. Mm-hmm. So it's like we are telling your story. I think that's what made that modular, those pieces of context, like the desegregation of higher education, you know, and that woman talking about, I mean, being the only woman on her floor, all the white students were up in the second floor and that they were pounding on the floor.
Fucked up shit.
Like, and she just turned up her Nina Simone and like drowned it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's, the connection is there. That was legitimate. That didn't feel like a hard reach like that. And that's what I like. This had like this incredible emotional through line.
Yeah.
It was just perfect.
Nasty white bitches.
I mean, that shit makes me just,
we need to go back and retroactively cancel them. I've come across like TikToks of like those historical like pictures of like the students going to the schools.
Yeah, yeah.
And there'll be people that are like, we need to find that guy in the back.
He's dead.
Where is that old man? And they're like, no, that guy died. Yeah. We need to cancel his children.
No, I mean,
I love that energy.
I mean, I think the idea of being able to time travel to bully racists.
Yeah.
Just bully them. That sounds fun.
I mean, I know that's going to be the first thing most of us do once we all get our government appointed time machines.
Yeah, that's, well, that and go back to this concert.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think like being able to go to musical events anytime in history is one of the only reasons to travel through time. Mm-hmm. Just going to say it.
I always thought of that scene in Sabrina the Teenage Witch when she discovers that she can travel back specifically to the 60s. Mm-hmm. So we're not totally off topic right now.
We're on topic.
But there's an episode where she finds out as a witch she can time travel. She goes to the 60s so she can buy cheap clothes.
Because
the clothes are cheaper
inflation.
And they're better made. Like they're handmade, American made, and they're like literally half the price.
How do you know that the people the Rose Bowl flea market aren't time travelers bringing us things from the past?
I don't know, but
like fleecing us.
Well, we already know they're fleecing us, but like, I would rather think they're making maybe a 300% profit instead of a 10,000% profit.
Yeah.
Dirty ass time travelers at the Rose Bowl.
Those time travelers.
Why didn't you stop Hitler?
Time travelers' wife should have just been about a woman going and shopping right in the past.
God, women be shopping. That's so fun. That could be its own comedy thing. It's just like a time traveler, but they're literally only doing it to flip, like just to find goods.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, yeah. You would like buy stock in something. I mean, we talked about that with Blast from the Past. He had all those like certificates for IBM,
right?
Like, right place, right time. People love this movie. We're not the only ones.
Yeah,
the reception's amazing. 99% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Well
done.
Yeah, it's well made, and I will say too, like, honestly, really well marketed, because documentaries are hard for people to.
They're getting sexier though.
Yeah, like, they are starting to get sexy. There's definitely docuseries, and true crime is obviously its own thing, and. But I will say, in terms of,
you're right.
The Academy nominees this year, tell me, like, a lot of people probably didn't see the majority of those.
Yeah, I don't even know what else was in the category. I know really
Flea, which was also an animated one, which which is on our queue.
Yeah, we're looking at it.
But that's, you know what I mean. Again, I know I'm saying this as not the most in touch person, but by the same token, I think that makes me a good person to speak on sort of insufficient.
No, this reached us.
Yeah, the importance of the reach of this particular doggy. Well, like, I give a lot of praise to Questlove and to like the marketing team, just the people who like went and campaigned for this.
They did a good job
to give it the awareness.
But it's also it almost didn't need a campaign, because it is a wonderful documentary.
Right.
It is engaging. It's interesting. It offers you insight.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's worthy. It's a worthy.
Yeah.
Whatever that even means for the Academy Awards, at this point. But
yeah, I mean,
it's worthy.
It was great. It was great. And I love documentaries. This was a good one. And I was like,
it's engaging.
Yeah.
There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to just enjoy about it as well.
It's very good. It premiered at Sundance and won in 2001, won the Grand Jury Prize.
Wait, 2001?
Oh, sorry, 2021.
Oh,
God.
Oh, fuck.
No, sorry.
We've been waiting a while.
2021.
I would have believed you.
No,
because I don't remember everything I read.
I get worried about the things that come out of my mouth that my ears don't hear.
Oh, no.
I'm like, uh-oh, what else am I
saying? Don't worry, I'll catch it.
Thank you. The rights were acquired by Fox Searchlight and Hulu. It doesn't matter. I don't care. It was released at the El Capitan Theater in Los Angeles and the AMC Magic Johnson Harlem 9 Multiplex on June 25th, 2021, not 2001. And I just bring that up because the Magic Johnson Theater, there's one in Harlem, and there was one, it's now called like Baldwin Hills, I think, or it's the AMC down there. He opened movie theaters in the early 90s or mid 90s. And that doesn't sound like much, but he was opening big theaters in like black neighborhoods. And
that's great.
Yeah. He was reinvesting like stuff in communities. And like, this is one of those things that he invested in.
Absolutely.
Like this Harlem movie theater.
That's cool.
I just want to bring that up.
Yeah.
Like one of many things Magic Johnson has done, but he really pushed. I just remember like having to learn about it for a documentary I worked on. And I don't know, he was like, you're going to sell out of hot dogs the first night if you don't get enough hot dogs. And sure enough, they sold out. And they're like, how do you know that? And I'm like, because it's a night out. Like, this is your dinner. This is your entertainment. This is the whole thing. That's
because it's a night out. That's so true.
Yeah.
Oh my
like
God.
The whole experience.
Thoughtful.
And like, you know, these kind of, I don't want to, you know, I'm sure they weren't exclusively white, but you know, like these other people in business who didn't quite understand that. They didn't understand the community they were serving is basically the point.
Yeah.
I don't know. Finally, it was broadcast on ABC earlier this year for kind of Black History Month. It was on February 20th. God, I'm bad at my dates and numbers today.
I'm not better.
But, you know, that's very unprecedented for a network to prime time, like broadcast, like not just a recent release, but like a documentary and one about such a specifically black event. That's great. You know what I mean? Like I don't watch civilian broadcast anymore is how I refer to it. But
civilians.
I just
Take a bath.
And then this thing won so many awards. We know it won the Academy Award. It won Best Spirit Award. This is all for Best Documentary. Mm-hmm. Won a BAFTA, the Producers Guild of America. It won a Grammy for Best Music Film. It won the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards for Best Documentary Feature, Best Archival Doc, Best Music Doc, Best First Documentary Feature, Best Director, wow. and Best Editing. That's it's a lot. Swept. Yeah. That is all the ones, okay?
Hell yeah.
Also, pretty much every critics association in the country, I mean, I could read all the cities. We're talking like Boston, Chicago, LA, Dallas, San Francisco, San Diego, Austin. Just keep going. And they all are like, this is the best documentary of the year.
I just keep thinking, that's a lot of toilet paper holders for Questlove. I just remember seeing someone with an Oscar, Golden Globe, or, you know, no, it's an Emmy because of the wings or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they had their toilet paper, they had their little toilet papers like they were using it.
Amazing.
Jokingly as that. And so I think about that with awards, with different good. Trophies. I'm like, I would totally have a bathroom with just a bunch of those on toilet paper rolls on all my little awards. If I had any.
I think Ben Hecht, the screenwriter from like the 30s, used his Oscar as a doorstop. He did not.
They look heavy.
They are heavy.
They're dense, right?
And yeah.
They better freaking be.
Yeah, they're really fucking heavy.
Good.
Like, it's
that's why you see the actors, best actresses, when they're like
two hands.
They look like they're flexing. They're like they're being wiry.
They're about to fall over.
Yeah, no, actresses, you gotta do some planks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You gotta do some,
hold it like you know. Like a peasant would hold a bottle of wine, you know, by the neck, and you just swing that shit around. That's your tool.
Huzzah!
That's your defense tool for the rest of the night, right?
That's my Oscar speech. Huzzah!
Huzzah!
Drink you, mateys. Oh, wait, man. I'm a pirate now. What are we talking about?
I'm the captain now.
I'm the captain. Look at me. I'm the captain now.
Oh, yeah. One other piece of this reception I wanted to share, because I thought this was just so cool. A lot of people, right, this isn't just long unseen footage of great musical performances. There's also a lot of faces of the crowd, and people watching this are starting to identify themselves or loved ones of theirs. Like, I think that's you. So I have a couple of names here. Karen Cox Green, 66, lives in Florida. She's like, I don't remember how we got there. I don't even think my parents know we were there. Like,
oh my God.
But she's like, I used to tell people all the time I went to a free concert and I saw Stevie Wonder. And, you know, it's like one of those distant memories. She was like 13 years old or something, you know?
Yeah.
Then there was another woman, Joy Bertson, who's 60 and working as a librarian in Brooklyn. She was 7 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. And I guess her family, you know, had brought her. And she's like, oh, it was great, you know, seeing myself dancing. But she's like, this wasn't a time when home video cameras were readily available to everyone. So, like, she's like, I've never seen myself move. I've never seen myself as a child like that. And so it was just a really interesting but strange experience for these people.
Like their first time seeing this, actually.
The only way they'll ever see it.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. But I thought that was so cool. With material like this, it's like you can't really like go and clear, get all those appearance releases. Like, what are you going to do, you know?
Right.
But I love that people are finding themselves and they're finding joy in it. And even when it's people who have passed, they're like, I knew it was him. I could tell right away, you know? And there's something really beautiful about that connection.
Absolutely.
Like, this really is like a ripple effect kind of movie.
It's to finding that hidden treasure and the collective attic treasure that everybody's like, oh, wow, look at that.
Yeah.
You know? But on like a way bigger scale.
Way bigger.
Yeah.
And I mean, we could talk about Questlove. I mean, there's so much about him.
Sure.
You know, but he's, you know, all you need to know is he came from a musical family, mm-hmm. grew up in Philly. When his parents would travel with the band, rather than leave him with a babysitter, they used to take him on the road. So he grew up on like backstage of doo-wop shows growing up, and you know, and by the time he was 7, he was starting to drum on stage with them.
Aww,
adorable.
Look at that.
I know. So he was really, really entrenched in music, and went to a creative performing arts high school in Philly. His parents were kind of like, you're gonna go to Juilliard, right? Like, and he's like, he had formed a band called Square Roots.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they dropped the square part, and that's really what like occupies his time for a while. But he's moved into like, he's a music journalist. He played himself, I guess you can call him an actor. You know, he's also a DJ, a producer. I mean, he's just so many things. And now director. And the guy is just, he's creative and he's continuing to explore.
He's a great example of somebody who has, you know, just entrenched themselves in the arts and is now as you can see with this, like actively using his influence to create this opportunity and awareness. That's very cool to see, because that doesn't always happen.
No.
Regardless of who it is and what genre of
work. There's a moment in this documentary where Chris Rock is talking about Stevie Wonder and saying it's incredible for how famous he was that he didn't get lazy.
Yeah.
And that kind of feels like Questlove, you know, like this guy could rest on his laurels, or he could have done nothing else if he wanted, but he didn't. Yeah, he didn't. He's not. You're right. He's such a complete artist. You know, you just get the feeling that
it's just what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you must.
And I'm glad that, you know, we're living in the same time as somebody like a creator like that. You
absolutely.
Know, it's very cool.
It's very cool. And and people ought to watch this.
Yeah, it's
such a gift. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I'd put it on again.
Yeah, definitely, because the music's fantastic.
Yeah. It is something that, like, you know, like, watch, like, put it on and, like, actually watch it.
Yeah, do not drift away from this.
Yeah, and then if you want to put it on again as sort of more of, like, a rock concert background thing, then you can jam while you fold laundry or maybe something.
It demands your
focus. But, like, watch it.
It demands
your
focus.
And then maybe you could just, like, vibe with it.
Yeah, because if you're staring at your phone half the time, you're going to be like, I didn't think it was that good.
Yeah. Or, you know, it'd be hard to, you can get disoriented pretty quickly because, again, it is not telling a chronological story.
No.
It's telling you.
No.
It's telling you something significant happened, and here's sort of the wide-reaching effect of everything else that was happening around it. It's more of this sort of almost like circular story as opposed to it being this trajectory of there being a means to an end about it.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah.
And just a wonderful piece of, like, history, too. And it's no secret that, you know, Black history is often buried and forgotten and not prioritized. And, you know, it's doubly important for people to see this shit.
Yeah.
Triply, maybe. I don't know.
Because it's all of our history, too. It's not just.
Exactly.
It is so importantly Black history. But it also does us all a disservice when we, you know, regardless of race, being Americans.
This is a great American documentary, period. Yeah. It's that. So you would watch it again.
Absolutely.
I would watch it again.
There you go.
That's our quest.
That's that.
Oh, and I know this doesn't really have a supporting player because it's Doc.
Sure.
But I'm just going to go ahead and nominate Tony Lawrence, the guy who put the thing together. He is the best supporting player in
Absolutely.
The story.
Absolutely.
Nothing would have happened without him.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Yeah.
And don't forget to like and review us on Apple Podcasts or rate and review us or whatever.
Wherever. You know those things, podcasts.
I guess if
you
like us, that means you would rate us. So go ahead and do that. Or you can just watch Summer of Soul.